by chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Christ make heaven in the middle of it. Christ make heaven in the middle. We are Christ make heaven.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield Brown. Hello, George.
Yeah, how you doing? You okay? Everything going all right?
Yeah, it's a warm day up here. Summer's coming.
Okay, it is. And there's a lot happening in this nation. After George Floyd's murder, I guess the way you'd have to describe it, there's all kinds of protests and demonstrations and looting and riotous behavior going on for the last 10 days or so. Have you been following it pretty closely, Charlie?
I did for a couple days.
Okay.
But no. Excuse me.
Okay, so you've been following it some. What are some of your thoughts so far?
Oh, it's tragic to see the violence being perpetrated on each other. It's sad.
Yeah, it is. But these large crowds, I was monitoring some of the sites. Rupley has some sites over in Paris and Sydney, Australia, and there's large thousands that are turning out in some of these international cities like Paris and Sydney, Australia. So this protest movement is going international now from what I could tell by some of the reports coming into us from those international capitals and great cities. So this protest now today in Washington, D.C., in front of the White House, you could say actually it's north of Lafayette Square there, but it's part of that. But you can see from the front of where the protest line will be, and they put up a big fence between the protesters and the police to try to control the crowd from storming the White House. But anyway, you can see from some of the camera shots the White House, and then behind there you can see the Washington Monument. Oh, I didn't tell you what happened Thursday night to the Washington Monument, did I, Charlotte?
No, what happened?
Got hit by lightning.
Well, that's interesting.
I picked it up on a video that was aired yesterday, which was Friday, the 5th of June, and it showed the lightning had to occur the night before, and there was a thunderstorm. And what it did was the protesters that were in front of the White House were sort of cooled off that night, and I think they sort of faded away. But during that thunderstorm, there was multiple lightning strikes, and one of them actually hit the Washington Monument, which was a phenomenal, you know what I mean, event. I don't know what happened on that. So anyway, that's something to take note of during this protest movement. In other words, also extending out a little bit on Refuse Fascism site, they allude back to the 1968, you could say, riot that occurred in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention, and I think it was promulgated by a bunch of revolutionaries which became the Weathermen. I think the Weathermen were actually a group by then, the Weathermen, and then the Weather Underground, and then they published a white paper on how to revolt against the country in the 70s there called Prairie Fire, I believe the name of that tract that they published. So this group that is one of the sponsors of this demonstration today or protest against the White House and against the killing of George Floyd, alludes and references the 1968 uproar there and the riots that ensued up in Chicago. So, you know, maybe they're trying to plan to do the same thing. I don't know. But a lot of shop owners lost a lot of property, didn't they, Charlotte?
From the video evidence, yeah, it sure seems that way.
And I saw people carry out these up brand, you know, like, I don't know the brands of the names of the, what, upscale purses or prestige items, but they went in there. I saw women carrying out multiple purses strung over their shoulder. Like, they really got that purse they always wanted. You know what I mean? And it's just something about this rioting that is just really disturbing. And the number of people, okay, that are actually involved in this thing is, boys, it's not good. Now, I'm thinking Trump is in the White House today. I don't think he's traveling, but we'll double check on that later. We're just going to give some of our general opinions this first 15 or 20 minutes, and then I'm going to say goodbye to Charlotte, and then I'm going to do some commentary on some audio clips that we're going to play the rest of the program. And do you think this thing is going to end anytime soon, Charlotte, or what is your idea and your opinion about, will this thing continue on for a while, or what? What's going to happen, you think?
I'm afraid it'll probably continue on, like, in copycat fashion.
Okay. Now you've had some experience in National Guard, is that right? And today there's been some arguments between Bowser. Muriel Bowser is the mayor of Washington, D.C., and Trump. And she actually evicted a National Guard group out of a hotel, and they had to go find another hotel and said they weren't going to pay the bill. So there's some controversy and conflicts occurring between the White House and the mayor of Washington, D.C. Oh, Charlotte, she also had painted the street in front of Lafayette Square. It'd be north of Lafayette Square that comes up to there. She painted the street with Black Lives Matter, their colors, which were yellow, I believe. But she painted that street yellow and put BLM in large letters alongside the street there. She did that yesterday. So many of the demonstrators today, and also, for our, listening audience, okay, you can go in and listen to us on thesecrettruth.com and also Ripley on YouTube, okay? You can go into YouTube and listen to and view, actually, some of the live video that's coming out of that demonstration there. So it's very, very interesting. Ripley is actually a Russian-affiliated, Russia Today affiliation with them, but they're Russian, but they do live video. They don't do any commentary on that, but they do a video stream, a live stream, from wherever they're at. Today they have two cameras in this audience, in this crowd that's in front of the White House there. And so you can go Ruptly, go in and put that in your browser in YouTube area. Go to YouTube, Ruptly, and you'll go to some of their live shots there. Also, Global Affairs has a live stream out also in there. And then also in addition, Fox News Network on their live stream, and you can go into there on watchnewslive.net. watchnewslive.net, and you can pull up their live programming, which will give you some live reporting from the networks there. So it's really, really interesting to see this unfolding today. But I'm really scared, Charlotte. You know what I'm scared about?
What's that?
Well, the crowds are large crowds. And I think what's happened is I think our population has been conditioned over decades and to a certain mindset to resent authority, maybe in police authority and governmental authority also. And I think that's being focused. The videos of that police officer with his knee on that man's, George Floyd's neck, and then him dying there evidently on the spot. It what it did was it hurt people at a very, very deep level, okay, and caused a lot of hate and resentment to be manifest by protesting and shouting out. You know what I mean? And I think that's one of the dynamics that we're seeing today. What would be your thoughts about some of the protesters? There's the legal, peaceful protesters, and then there's that little small group that committed these looting acts. What would be some of your comments about the protesters in general, Sharon?
Well, the idea of peaceful assembly is paramount here. That's in our Constitution. And the peaceful protesters are not the problem. I'm not going to distinguish, but there are psychopaths in the population that will like a host living off a parasite living off a host. The parasite in society rears its head during times of vulnerability.
Okay.
So you're
saying there are some criminal elements, revolutionary type criminal elements that are causing some of the damage, and then involved with them could be criminal looters, just criminals, right? Taking advantage of the chaos. What do you think?
Pretty much, that's what I think.
Okay. So that makes sense. Is where I think in addition to this, you've got a number of people out there that have been, you could say, conditioned into a state of social and moral relativism through our school systems. And I think there's many people that are well-meaning, and most of the time I think they're law-abiding. But in these mob scenes and these mob psychology types of situations, they will go over the line because induced into them is so much of a love and a need for these prestige items like these purses and shoes, and they can see an opportunity. They can get those things, and they want those things, so they're going to go get them. And I think there's a certain number of people that are just going across the line that normally wouldn't commit crimes at all. What do you think, Charlotte?
I don't know. I would never steal from a building that was not my property. I don't touch other people's property.
Well, you have a respect for property rights, right? Is that right?
Yeah, as we all should, because you can be killed protecting, or not protecting, but invading somebody else's property or damaging it.
Well, now that's especially true when you have a home invader or something, and the resident of that home has a gun, and there are people that get shot by these home invaders are getting shot throughout the country for going into someone's home uninvited and trying to rip them off or burglarize them or rob them, right? So we have the right to defend ourselves, especially in our homes, okay? Now, we also have a right to defend our property, and there was one scene up in New York, I think it was, where there were people right outside the door of this shop, and there were people standing inside that were, you know, either employees or owners with shotguns, and they said, "You're not getting in," and they kept those people out of their shop, and some of those rioters and potential looters backed off. They saw those guns there of people standing in the doorways and behind the doors, and they kept the doors locked, see, and they backed off. So there is a deterrent in being armed, see what I mean? And I don't think there's anything wrong with protecting your own property, whether it's a business, and especially there's greater, you could say, precedent for defending your family and your home, and especially at night, Charlotte. Nighttime hides a lot of devious, evil acts, and that's where you have the most protection in using deadly force against people that are trying to invade your home or do harm to your family or to rob you or whatever, especially, or on your property even, especially at night. How do you think this thing is going to resolve itself, Charlotte?
I'm not the Oracle of Delphi. I have no idea.
You're not the Oracle of Delphi, huh? Well, do you think, let me ask you a question. Do you think it eventually will settle down and dissipate? Or do you think it's going to increase in scope and intensity? What would be your opinions there?
We need leadership on the local level that'll put a stop to the looting. Okay. We need to have the police academies need to be respected again. It's terrible what that one police officer did to George Floyd.
Yeah.
That was just terrible. It was inhumane, and it crossed the line, and it seems murderous because the man told him he couldn't breathe.
Right, right. Well, that's why I think it's affected people at an especially deep psyche level. And so I think that's what's wrong with this, and not wrong with this, but that's one of the dynamics that's unfolding on the street, see? Because it was such an evil act, and we saw that video, it disturbed us at a deep psyche level. And I think that that is what part of the demonstrations on the scope and the size of those people that's unfolding right now. That's why I think we're reaching a point here of a riotous takeover of the country if we're not careful. We don't handle these protesters properly. It could go on the violent side, and it could be ugly. And that's what I hope and pray, that it doesn't reach those proportions, okay? So anyways, that's what I feel like that we've got to avoid this evening, especially in front of the White House. Oh, and this Refuse Fascism group has announced also at Hollywood and Vine. Have you been out there before on that intersection at Hollywood and Vine?
Not only on vacation.
Yeah, but anyway, there's another protest that goes on at noon on Pacific time at noon today, which would place it at about 3 o'clock Eastern time today, which is an hour ahead of us. So that would be about 2 o'clock our time. So the West Coast demonstration that Refuse Fascism has announced would start occurring. But one thing that I noticed on the video today, streaming out of Rupley and other Global Affairs and even Fox, is that they started collecting from noon onward on Eastern time, at noon onward, they started coming into that area. So they're way ahead of the 4 hour schedule that they first presented to us, that they might, you know. So this thing is building up, and thousands are coming in, not just 2,000 or 3,000. I'm talking about tens of thousands are beginning to collect outside of the White House there, north of the Lafayette Park. And I just hope and pray that it doesn't turn into just a tremendous, you know, violent mess, you know. Now, at night is usually where most of the criminality occurs. So during these daylight hours, we may not see much violence from this group. But there were people dressed in all black in there that could have been part of the disruptor group that I noticed earlier. So right. They won't be acting out until it gets dark. But I fear that there will be more fires in D.C. tonight. That's what I fear more than any other thing, because with all these people there, it's hard to manage that by the police force on the ground. So there's a lot of criminal and revolutionary types that could do very devious acts behind those large groups. Any closing comments here before I wish you goodbye, Charlotte?
No, but thank you for including me. I feel great, and I look forward to maybe doing some more in the future.
Okay, Charlotte. Well, thank you for your comments this evening. We wish you luck, and we'll talk to you later. Okay, thank you very much, Charlotte Littlefield Brown. Okay? Okay.
All right. Love you, George. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Charlotte, for being with us that first 20 minutes of our program. And what we're going to do next is we're going to get into some of the clips that came up this last week. And this first one was Secretary of Defense Esper, And he says some things about that he wouldn't support an insurrection act. The only problem with that, Secretary Esper, is that it's not up to you. And you shouldn't have jumped the president, jumped ahead on this and announced that you just would not support this. That is not the way, you work for the president. Okay. And he doesn't work for you. So Esper, this is, going to play this little clip here. Then I'll make some further comments. Here we go now.
At times, however, the United States military is asked, in support of governors and law enforcement, to help maintain law and order so that other Americans can exercise their rights free from violence against themselves or their property. That is what thousands of guardsmen are doing today in cities across America. It is not something we seek to do, but it is our duty, and we do it with the utmost skill and professionalism. I was reminded of that Monday as I visited our National Guardsmen who were on duty Monday night protecting our most hallowed grounds and monuments. I'm very proud of the men and women of the National Guard who are out on the streets today performing this important task and in many ways at the risk of their own welfare. I've always believed and continue to believe that the National Guard is best suited for performing domestic support to civil authorities in these situations, in support of local law enforcement. I say this not only as Secretary of Defense, but also as a former soldier and a former member of the National Guard. The option to use active duty forces in a law enforcement role should only be used as a matter of last resort and only in the most urgent and dire of situations. We are not in one of those situations now. I do not support invoking the Insurrection Act.
Like I said earlier, Secretary Esper has no right to take a lead on whether or not the Pentagon, through the Secretary of Defense, would invoke that or not. He shouldn't have expressed that opinion at all. And he might not be there much longer, because I would say it's a form of insubordination to jump over the Commander-in-Chief, who is our President Donald Trump. Now, Trump, he acts out a little bit. He insults people a little bit too much. But overall, he has a deep love for this country. And so, and as a result, these generals that assaulted him recently, that's not going to make it. They're the ones that are not coming clean on 9/11 and other very, very dangerous, you could say, operations that have been carried out against us and that have endangered this country and our constitutional rights and privileges, much less our constitutional government that's still standing. But anyway, here we have A.G. Barr expressing some ideas about some of these, you could say, very violent, violence-oriented groups. Here we go with Attorney General Barr.
Unfortunately, the aftermath of George Floyd's death has produced a second challenge to the rule of law. While many have peacefully expressed their anger and grief, others have hijacked protests to engage in lawlessness, violent rioting, arson, looting of businesses and public property, assaults on law enforcement officers and innocent people, and even the murder of a federal agent. Such senseless acts of anarchy are not exercises of First Amendment rights. They are crimes designed to terrify fellow citizens and intimidate communities. As I told the governors on Monday, we understand the distinction between three different sets of actors here. The large preponderance of those who are protesting are peaceful demonstrators who are exercising their First Amendment rights. At some demonstrations, however, there are groups that exploit the opportunity to engage in such crimes as looting. And finally, at some demonstrations, there are extremist agitators who are hijacking the protests to pursue their own separate and violent agenda. We have evidence that Antifa and other similar extremist groups, as well as actors of a variety of different political persuasions, have been involved in instigating and participating in the violent activity. And we are also seeing foreign actors playing all sides to exacerbate the violence. The Department of Justice is working to restore order in the District of Columbia and around the nation. Here in Washington, we are working with the local police, the citizen soldiers of the National Guard, and other federal agencies to provide safety and justice. We have deployed all the major law enforcement components of the department on this mission, including the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, the Bureau of Prisons, and the U.S. Marshals Service. Their leaders are with me today and will be talking shortly. I thank all of these leaders and their components for working bravely and professionally to protect the district. I'm pleased to say that, especially over the last two nights, the demonstrations, while large, have been peaceful.
That was Bill Barr explaining about some of the more violent elements in there. And what we're going to do next, you're going to put up a clip. Robert Barnes and his new program, he's come across some really, really insightful insights. And he has one here now that is really well written and well produced on Black Lives Matter, the origin. And I think he ties George Soros deeply involved with Black Lives Matter. But here we go with what Robert Barnes has to say.
Welcome to another edition of American Countdown here on Thursday, June the 4th, 2020. The question resolved tonight, who is behind the riots? We know of the participation of BLM, Black Lives Matter. We know from the Attorney General and from common sense and from knowledge of recent history, the role and involvement of Antifa and Antifa-allied groups. We know of the media's participation by exaggerating certain risks, building fake narratives, and hiding the degree of looting and burning and arson taking place. The question is whether it could be coordinated with the help of some one or ones more powerful even than those groups individually on their own. Where do those groups partially get their funding, their support, their subsidy, their ability to organize in the first instance? So that's a question we will explore tonight. First, there is a good article called Connoisseur of Chaos in the City Journal, which is published by the Manhattan Institute, which goes into the history of one George Soros. As it details, George Soros, a man who you probably don't know, was convicted of insider trading a long time ago. He's someone who managed to get fantastically wealthy without building anything, without making anything, without apparently selling anything, without employing very many people. And he appeared to come almost from scratch to that degree of billionaire wealth and then has used it to influence politics. What is less known about him is that he's been accused of insider trading on multiple contexts, including his backing of the alleged Ponzi scheme Herbalife. But he was actually convicted of it when a court actually took him to trial in France. He was found guilty and levied a fine of millions of dollars. But there's more to who George Soros is. There is sort of a Sorosian world order, as this article goes into detail, where Soros declared that the main obstacle to a stable and just world order, in his view, is the United States. He sees the United States and nationalism as his primary enemy, adversary to overcome and undo. Indeed, he sees a world of open borders and global governance. He's been open about this in his Open Societies Foundation that then funnels money to a wide range of grants and institutions, part of which ended up being leaked by a group of D.C. hackers who got into it and disclosed it to the world, disclosing the degree and the scope and the scale of it. WikiLeaks was also involved in exposing George Soros when they exposed the DNC leaks involving John Podesta because there were emails concerning the George Soros Institution in that regard as well. If you read his background, he grew up in Hungary and was there during Nazi Germany. His father believed in what's called Esperanto, the artificial language that he and other disciples around the world believed would eventually become the world's tongue. And that was, he believed there would be one language and one world. That's the ideology in which he was tutored when he was young. His next second major influence was when he was listed as the adopted grandson of a Nazi officer in Hungary during the Nazi era. And in that respect, he actually openly talked about what his role was and how he was not bashful, ashamed, or afraid of the fact that he helped participate and watched on as this adopted grandfather actually went about looting Jewish wealth in the country. Let's take a look at that video clip.
You're a Hungarian Jew who escaped the Holocaust by posing as a Christian.
Right.
And you watched lots of people get shipped off to the death camps.
Right. I was 14 years old. And I would say that that's when my character was made.
In what way?
That one should think ahead, one should understand and anticipate events, and one is threatened. It was a tremendous threat of evil. I mean, it was a very personal experience of evil.
My understanding is that you went out with this protector of yours who swore that you were his adopted godson.
Yes.
Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric couch for many, many years. Was it difficult?
Not at all. Not at all. Maybe as a child you don't see the connection. But it created no problem at all.
No feeling of guilt.
No.
For example, that I'm Jewish, and here I am watching these people go. I could just as easily be there. I should be there. None of that.
Well, of course, I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away. But there was no sense that I shouldn't be there, because that was well, actually, funny way, it's just like in markets, that if I weren't there, of course I wasn't doing it, but somebody else would be taking it away anyhow. In other words, whether I was there or not, I was only a spectator, the property was being taken away. So I had no role in taking away that property. So I had no sense of guilt.
Notice that when he talks about no sense of guilt, but also when he says that he was only a spectator, it's the one time in the interview that his eyes close, which can be a telltale sign of somebody that's lying, that he may have been more than just a spectator in facilitating the confiscation and looting of Jewish wealth during the Nazi era. There is this sort of hagiographic, mythical portion of George Soros' time during that era, in which if you get to the YouTube favored media publications or favored videos or other forms of media propaganda, you'll see they claim that they'll suggest that he changed his last name. His family changed their last name in order to escape the Holocaust. That's completely false. He was a co-complicit participant in activities that took place in the Holocaust. They had changed their name before then. The reason why they changed their name was to follow that Esperanto religious language belief, to change the name to Soros to mean to soar, as part of this idea that there would be one language, that there would be one world, and that this would govern all. That's where the mindset and mentality comes from, and it's one of the many propaganda components of George Soros' story that is hidden from the institutional and establishment press. In the same capacity, he described his following of a Viennese professor, Karl Popper, that where he got the idea for the Open Society and the name of its current foundation and political institutes that spread money around to those who will destabilize governments around the world. He described it as, quote, a place free of tribal affinities like religion, like nationalism, like traditional economics. This is someone who does not believe in traditional religion, sees it as a threat, doesn't believe in national identity, sees it as a threat, doesn't believe in traditional economic formulas, sees it too as a threat, though he has got fabulously rich while banking and betting on the crises that take place around the world. In that capacity, the article goes on to detail how he actually told people early on that the reason why he stayed, he was going to just make some money and retire and be a philosophy professor, but that stopped quickly. because he decided he liked the money and his, quote, self-importance. As he himself puts it, to put it bluntly, I fancied myself as some kind of God. That's what George Soros himself said to others and why he continued to do what he did and why he continues to operate as he does. Indeed, there are a few, if you look at how he's actually made his money, as the article details, quote, there are only a few speculators who have so profited from disasters and crises like George Soros has. Indeed, often he can be seen as complicit in creating those crises, particularly in currencies and other aspects, by his influence in the markets. He believes in that. He believes that he can take certain actions that can cause the markets to react in a certain way to enrich himself at the expense of the public and at the expense of various governments. Indeed, as he described it during the 2008 financial crisis, where, again, he got fabulously wealthy after he had almost busted the Bank of England about 15 years before, famously, he said, quote, I'm having a very good crisis, he told the reporter. Once again, crisis for Soros is opportunity, opportunity for personal wealth, opportunity for pushing through his political objectives and agenda. Indeed, the leaked emails and papers from the Open Society that DC Leaks exposed back in 2015-16 detail about how he saw the Syrian refugee crisis as, quote, an opportunity to rethink migration's governance. Translation, use agitprop to flood Europe and the U.S. with refugees as a way to bring about the world that he wants to believe in, one where old borders and institutions are irrelevant, one in which American exceptionalism is no more. Indeed, he has long been an opponent of the state of Israel and has done everything possible to undermine its existence and its political support, including donating millions of dollars to various organizations that have ties to Palestinian terror operations. Further, the leaks also further exposed his willingness and readiness to shape media coverage, including, quote, let's select journalists from the five target countries and offer them long-stay reporting trips. And this was his involvement in the complicity of overthrowing the government of Ukraine. If you want to understand the way his mindset mentality operates, this is someone who grew up in an era in which governments were overthrown with ease, and he has helped facilitate the overthrow of many of those governments throughout Eastern and Central Europe. Many of the color revolutions have had complicity of various government agencies as well, but they appear to be indigenous, organic, authentic revolutions of the street. But often they turn out to be orchestrated, organized, coordinated. That is why he is called headline describes him, quote, the connoisseur of chaos. One could also call him the creator and coordinator of chaos. He does it by infiltrating media groups, using what's called NGOs, non-governmental organizations, and does so through funneling money in a wide range of means and mechanisms to basically infiltrate movements and instigate rebellion. And he's accustomed to seeing that work, letting that sink currencies, letting that destroy economies, letting that overthrow governments, as it has in many parts of Eastern and Central Europe when he was a kid, and as many parts of Eastern and Central Europe now with his own influence, creating that possibility and that outcome. Now, what is one of George Soros' favorite groups? Well, this article details, Soros' favorite is Black Lives Matter. He has helped create it. He's helped fund it. He's helped push the fake narratives that surround it to the degree that now we're even seeing the former Clinton campaign manager and other high-profile individuals, including members of Congress, call for literally defunding the police. Los Angeles is even talking about diverting large amounts of money from the police into groups as directed by Black Lives Matter. Imagine a world without the police. That's the world we're witnessing right now in many city streets across the country. It is a world of chaos, of violence, of disorganization. Indeed, the police is the sort of the thin blue line between criminality and chaos and an organized society rooted in its traditional institutions and American constitutional law. George Soros is someone that helped facilitate, promote, and propagate Black Lives Matter with his substantial funding in a wide range of directions. In the same context, he's not only funded various forms like illegal immigration organization and attacks on the Catholic Church. Well, dig deeper into Black Lives Matter's other strange affiliations and associations. And what you'll find is that Black Lives Matter often focuses obsessively on issues of illegal immigration, issues against the church, including promoting various issues related to more extremist aspects of gay and lesbian politics. Does that sound like a group rooted in actual black lives that actually would be concerned with actual black lives? Or is that a political template to create insurrection in the country along the lines of George Soros's agenda? Indeed, if you read and watch and go through what Black Lives Matter supports and subsidizes, what they patronize and propagate, what you will find is an organization that is almost strictly in line with George Soros's agenda, but not one that is aligned with the street, that is aligned with black business, that is aligned with black churches, that is aligned with the cornerstone and the foundation of black civil rights in this country going on over more than a century. Maybe that's not a coincidence. Maybe that is not merely chance. Indeed, if we take a look at it, I'm not the only one who has that viewpoint. The Lord Jamar, someone that's influential within, that comes from the street, that's influential in black civil rights movements as a political figure himself within the musical and cultural industry for the African American population. This was his view of Black Lives Matter. Let's take a look at video clip number 10.
And I'm not no Black Lives Matter supporter. Like,
you're not?
No, absolutely.
Why not?
Because it's not our movement. This is a movement that was given to us by, you know, George Soros and his fucking boys. Because they saw how things were going and they didn't want it to go back to the 60s to where we start having our own organic movements. That was a big problem for them. So let's give the people a movement that we can control. We'll provide them the leaders and all of this type of. And, yeah. That's what Black Lives Matter is. Look at the leaders of Black Lives Matter.
Are there leaders of Lives Matter?
Yeah.
Who?
Look at these lesbian women who are trying to incorporate, you know, LG, whatever the fuck the letters are, incorporate those, their concerns into black people's concerns. Go to the website. Look it up. Google George Soros and Black Lives Matter. See what comes up.
Let's look it up.
Okay. And you know, y'all out there, George Soros is a fucking multi-billionaire down with, you know, some of the 12 richest people in the fucking world.
He raised $100 million.
Yep.
For Black Lives Matter Coalition. The funding comes in addition to more than $33 million in grants from top Democratic Party donor George Soros. Okay, here we go. Okay, so, So
what billionaire would have done that for the Black Panther Party?
$33 million. Well, hold on.
Huh?
Hold on. In high school, I read some books about the Black Panther movement.
Mm-hmm. Charlton Heston, maybe people like that.
Indeed, that's revealing how people on the street really see Black Lives Matter that have actual grounding and roots in the civil rights movement. Indeed, in this respect, if we look at other people's opinions about the strategies taken by Black Lives Matter and how it backfires, consider a Professor Lowry who had a recent discussion with another professor, and he outlines the problems with taking this approach, and he's trying to appeal to those on the left. So he even plays into the caricatures they have of middle America and white militia members and things like that. But he's explaining that if you actually believe any of this, the idea that you're propagating is hurting. Because rather than universalizing the causes and issues that relate to police abuse, rather than looking at actual solutions, you're creating a divisive logic and a divisive politics that will backfire. It will backfire because it will highlight issues related to black on white crime that will not be productive and positive for civil rights advancement in the country. You're also denying people the recognition and reality that police abuse affects all people of all races and all religions and all backgrounds. And he outlines and explains the difficulties with that kind of agenda and why he opposes the BLM method of operation. Let's take a look at video clip number 3.
To your question, I have two answers. One has to do with the broadened base of political protest against the institutional practices that we abhor. Okay. This has to do with police training. It has to do with police accountability. It has to do with police rules of engagement, et cetera. So that's a serious issue of public policy. The more people that one has lined up to argue for reform in that area, the better one is. Casting the problem as a universal problem that affects all citizens gives you the chance of putting together a more effective coalition to get the policies changed. So more allies, if I say we're all or susceptible to being victimized in this way, which is indeed the case. We are all susceptible.
Yeah.
Those African Americans will be statistically at greater risk. Okay. But the other reason that I give is I just fear that the racialization of this kind of discourse, which is very far advanced now, invites a look at the full picture of criminal victimization, not only where the police are the perpetrators, and the overrepresentation of African Americans amongst offenders is a prominent fact about that situation. So if I start talking about people getting killed by people in a different race, and I start just counting how many white people are killed by black people, how many black people are killed by white people? There's a lot more white people killed by black people than there are black people killed by white people, even though blacks are a minority of the population.
Yeah.
There are all kinds of heinous crimes that are being undertaken where whites are being victimized by blacks, looking at the robbery statistics, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So, I mean, I fear the day when I have a mob of white people out in front of the courthouse demanding that black criminals who are perpetrating these awful crimes in our society be punished. And I think we're seeing it a little bit when we see militia looking whites who are brandishing weapons out in front of their residential enclaves or their businesses, almost daring somebody to come up. I shudder to think what these conversations look like, which we enlightened on the coast will dismiss, you know, amongst just ordinary workaday Joes who happen to be white. And like their hunting and fishing, and keep their weapons and appreciate their Second Amendment rights. I shudder to think, you know, we dismiss them on the coast as, oh, they're just a bunch of racists and white supremacists. You know, we think that we can rule them out of court because they're moral reprobates. Once this racialized conversation continues in this way, we invite a racialized backlash that I shudder to contemplate. So, those are my reasons to think about it as something that's happening to Americans, rogue cops who need to be held accountable and punished, and to enumerate the cases of white victims of this police violence as well as blacks, because I want a broad coalition and because I really don't want to have the crime and punishment or conversation in the country so thoroughly racialized. I think that works to the detriment of blacks in the long run.
It definitely works to the detriment of the black community in the long run. In addition, the whole mythology that BLM is built on, that this violence is racially targeted and racially directed and only about race, is one that has been rebutted and refuted, as we have on this show, going through the studies by black liberal professors from Harvard who showed that, in fact, there was no disproportionate shootings and killings of black men in America when he went back and looked at a long range of data. Recently, Tucker Carlson took a look at just the cases that happened in 2019, showing that, indeed, there is no genocidal epidemic, as BLM is trying to pitch. Let's look at video clip number 8.
Since 2015, the Washington Post has maintained a comprehensive database of fatal police shootings in this country. Last year, the Post logged a total of 1,004 killings. Of the 802 shootings in which the race of the police officer and the suspect was noted, 371 of those killed were white, 236 were black. The vast majority of those killed were not, in fact, unarmed. The vast majority were armed, and African-American suspects were significantly more likely to have a deadly weapon than white suspects. Yet more white suspects were killed. Overall, there were a total of precisely 10 cases in the United States last year, according to the Washington Post, in which unarmed African-Americans were fatally shot by the police. There were 9 men and 1 woman. Now, as we said, a lot is at stake. The country is at stake. So we want to take the time now to go through these case by case into the specifics. The first was a man called Chinara Feep. He was killed by a Knoxville police officer called Dylan Williams. According to Williams, Feep attacked him, choked him, and then used a taser on him, the suspect on the police officer, before the officer shot him. 5 eyewitnesses corroborated the officer's claim, and the officer was not charged. The second case concerns a man called Marcus McVeigh. He was, by any description, a career criminal from San Angelo, Texas. He'd been convicted of aggravated assault on a public servant, and organized criminal activity. At the time he was killed, he was wanted on drug dealing charges. A Texas state trooper pulled him over. McVeigh fled in his car, then he fled on foot into the woods. There he fought with a trooper and was shot and killed. The officer was not charged in that case. Marzua Scott assaulted a shop employee. When a female police officer arrived and ordered the suspect toward her car, he instead charged her and knocked her to the ground. At that point, she shot and killed him. The entire incident was caught on body camera. The officer was not charged. Ryan Twyman was being approached by two L.A. County deputies when he backed into one of them with his vehicle. The deputy was caught in the car door. He and his partner opened fire. The deputies were not charged in that case. Melvin Watkins of East Baton Rouge, Louisiana, was shot by a deputy after he allegedly drove his car toward the deputy at high speed. The deputy was not charged. Isaiah Lewis, meanwhile, wasn't just unarmed. He was completely naked. Williams broke into a house and then attacked a police officer. The police tased Williams, but he kept coming at them and attacking. The officer shot him. They were not charged. Atiana Johnson Jefferson was shot by a Fort Worth deputy called Aaron Dean. A neighbor had called a non-emergency number after seeing Johnson's door open, thinking something might be wrong. Police arrived. Johnson saw them approach from a window and was holding a gun at the time. According to body camera footage, the officer shot Johnson within seconds. Jefferson. That officer has been charged with homicide. Christopher Whitfield was shot and killed in a place called Ethel, Louisiana. He had robbed a gas station. Deputy Glenn Sims said his gun discharged accidentally while grappling with Whitfield's. Sims, who is black himself, was not charged in that killing. Kevin Mason was shot by police during a multi-hour standoff. While Mason turned out not to have a gun, Mason claimed to have a gun, claimed to be armed, and vowed to kill police with it. They believed him. Mason had been in a shootout with police years before. And finally, the 10th case concerns Gregory Griffin. He was shot during a car chase. An officer called Giovanni Crespo claimed he saw someone pointing a gun at him. Later, a gun was in fact found inside the vehicle, and yet Officer Crespo was charged anyway with aggravated manslaughter. Those are the facts. That is the entire list from 2019, last year. 10 deaths. In 5 deaths, an officer was attacked just before the shooting occurred. That is not disputed. One allegedly was an accident. That leaves a total of 4 deaths during a pursuit or in a standoff. So out of 4, in 2 of those cases, in fully half, the officer was criminally charged. Is it possible that more of these officers should have been charged? Of course it's possible. Justice is not always served, that's for sure. But either way, this is a very small number in a country of 325 million people. This is not genocide. It's not even close to genocide. It is laughable to suggest it is. In fact, the number of police killings is dropping. In 2015, during Barack Obama's presidency, 38 unarmed black Americans and 32 whites were slain by police. Overall totals have fallen since then, and they have fallen far more dramatically for African American men. Last year was the safest year for unarmed suspects since the Washington Post began tracking police shootings. It was the safest year for both white and black suspects. At the same time, this country remains a dangerous place for police officers. 48 of them were murdered in 2019, according to FBI data. That's more than the number of unarmed suspects killed of all races. One final number for you, because it matters. In 2018, 7,407 African Americans were murdered in the United States. If 2019 continues on a similar trajectory, and we hope it doesn't, but if it does, that would mean that for every unarmed African-American shot to death in the United States by police, more than 700 were murdered by someone else, usually by someone they know. Again, those are the facts. They are not in dispute. Are African-Americans being hunted, as Joy Reid recklessly claimed on MSNBC recently? Or is something else happening? Is our nation being ripped apart by a total and complete lie, a provable lie, a lie used by cynical media manipulators and unscrupulous politicians who understand that racial strife, race hatred, is their path to power, even if it destroys the country? You have the facts now, and you can decide what's really going on.
Indeed, a path to power appears to be the modus operandi of those supporting BLM and other groups that we'll get into after the break. It does fit the path that George Soros himself has described as what he wants to achieve and attain. and he's put billions of dollars behind it. But we also can't exclude the possibility of some degree of rogue government involvement. Remember, it was the FBI who set about trying to set up the president over the past year, or the past 4 years. So we get to that and other issues when we come back after the break.
That was Robert Barnes with American Countdown. And so much, some of this, now this is my stand on here. George Floyd was murdered. And the problem with this is that it was on video, so the police did not get away with it, and that's good. But it was insidiously evil murder. And that's what affected people at a deep level. And I don't blame them for being out there, whether they're black or white or whatever, you know, whoever. So they turned out. And so I fully support the demonstrators and the protesters about this particular case. Now, when you're talking about multiple cases throughout the country, you've got to get back to the statistics. And I think that's where Tucker Carlson in this American Countdown program was trying to come from. But anyway, Robert Barnes, American Countdown, you can find that on the internet. But it's a really, really good program, and it's well worth watching. Just want to thank everyone out there for listening this evening. And like I said before, the George Floyd, murder took place. The officers are in jail under charges, under serious charges. And we do want justice to be attained. And so we pray and we sympathize with his loved ones and his family. And we hope and pray that justice, like I said, will finally be attained. We broadcast weekly on Texas Liberty Radio Network, Texas Liberty Network, on thesecrettruth.com. Go in there, and it's between 7 and 9. Otherwise, you can find us on thesecrettruth.com. And tonight we have the second hour that I did some pronouncements and made some statements. And we're going to hopefully have Tony Gosling in there with us for that second half of that second hour. And then we'll get into some international, you could say, opinions and comments from Tony Gosling. And he's very well informed and so forth. He's on the liberal left, labor left, and I'm on the patriot right. But Tony and I are friends. Like I said just a few seconds ago, he's on the labor liberal left out of Bristol, and I'm on the patriot, you could say, conservative right. But we're friends, and we respect one another's opinions. And so that's part of really putting together a program that matters, see. And I believe that all life matters, and black lives matter too. But also anyone's life matters a lot to me. And I believe that God, Almighty, He respects life. And in respecting life, then we should also respect each other's lives. And that's what really makes a loving, caring world. Otherwise, what do we have? We have a bunch of rioting like we're having today, see? And that's not going to get us anywhere. We must forgive one another for our transgressions against one another. And then we must try to reestablish a loving relationship. And within our families, we've got to put together families that care again for one another. Thank you for listening, and good night.